This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, so many things to talk about. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. Every Thursday, we talk about things that are burning hot in the South African context. What's going on in society, in politics, in the economy. And, of course, the ruling party parliament. We've got another Sona coming up. There's lots to talk about. And I'm pleased always to bring in some of the smartest people in South Africa to share their ideas and their thoughts with us. And some such people have also been well-known writers in various publications across the country. And one of them is with us this morning, Sam Gokeli. How are you, sir? It's very nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, no, it's good of you to join us. I know that it's an early morning in winter and not everybody's favorite time to be up. But there's lots to talk about today. The first thing that's on everyone's mind when it comes to the political sphere in South Africa is we still aren't sure who has all the power or even the majority of the power in the ANC at the moment. Is it the Ace Magashule people? Is it the Cyril Ramaphosa people? Or is it anyone else, maybe? And we see that this is even more confusing when we look at the Zuma-era ministers who have been elected as chairs of the parliamentary portfolio committees, which has confused people. So do you have any clarity? You wrote a very interesting article just on exactly this issue about Cyril and Ace. So we could start there if you want to. What's going on with Cyril and Ace? What's going on with this battle of the bulls?
Look, the train is moving. I don't know what direction they take.
Is this like the train?
Is this like Cyril's train?
I don't know.
Is this the train Cyril was on?
I don't know.
2 hours
the driver
later.
I think even if the South Africans are the passengers in these trains. I
mean, oh, if there's gravy.
It smells like they eat some gravy.
Is there gravy
I don't
on
know
this train?
The two guys, the president of the Republic and the ANC and Ace Magashule, they're on different tracks, really. Mm. One is headed south and the other going east, not even north.
Right.
But he's just going. You know? Ace is completely unplayable, unpredictable. I mean, you saw the announcement yesterday with the portfolio committee chairs. I was just imagining, if you were Cyril Ramaphosa, a methodical guy, a thoughtful guy, a sophisticated fellow, how do you manage somebody like Ace Magashule? What do you do? You know he's gonna surprise you every day.
He's like a drunk uncle.
Wait.
At a family birthday.
Hold on. Before we go to the Uncle Elks, right? Can we just have a moment, take a step back? I think for all our listeners, you know, Sam, you take it for granted. Maybe not everybody understands the power between Ace at Luthuli House and the president at the Union Buildings and why those two are the bulls in the crowd that you're saying. So can you just take us a step back and give us that information?
What are the prerogatives
of
both?
Why are these two people so powerful?
Okay. Look, Cyril has got all the constitutional power in the ANC to lead it in whatever way. He was elected with a very thin majority in Nasrec. He was surprised himself. He won because he didn't campaign. So Didi Mabuza did all the work for him and Mashatile. They pushed him over the line. And then you had Ace Magashule, who surprised everyone. He became the SG when there was somebody else who was taken to the podium, Senzo Mkunu, celebrating the victory. And it was really surprising that somebody from the weaker slate could become the SG of the ANC. But that was accepted, and then he became. So the SG in the ANC, the constitution makes them the chief spokesman of the party. They are the chief administrator, and they get to run the office at Luthuli House.
So he's like the CEO of the party.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then the SG, Mr. Ramaphosa runs the government.
But even
these two sometimes get their roles mixed up, because you often have people in government saying things about the ANC that they actually mean to say the government, and sometimes they mean to say the government, and they say the ANC.
Look, it was better under Jacob Zuma, because there was no confusion about that. To him, the ANC came first. So as wrong as that was, at least you knew where he stood. So currently, we have people who are saying different things, and we assume because Mr. Ramaphosa is the guy who helped and led the crafting of the Constitution, and he's a lawyer, and he really lives the values of the Constitution. We assume he's going to act in that sense. But the political reality is that he's in a difficult situation of a very thin majority he got in NASREC and very little control of the party in the numbers sense, but also in terms of the cultural, political culture sense. In that the ANC lost its way a long way. I mean, maybe even before 94. So it struggled with the character of its members. I remember in the year 2000, Thabo Mbeki was talking about renewing, creating a different kind of a cadre who wouldn't take money, the kind of cadre who wasn't going to remove him in Bulugwane. And that cadre removed him.
Yeah, he didn't. That dream died very quickly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of people in the membership. Profile in the ANC. So every 5 years they have a conference where they get very honest about the state of the ANC. The different SGs, Khalima Motlanthe, Gwede Mantashe, they've been brutal about the decline qualitatively of the membership profile of the ANC in terms of the ethical compass of the party. So that is the kind of a party that Cyril Ramaphosa inherited in NASREC, and he gave this whole spiel about the new dawn. I mean, I say the new dawn is a lipstick on a pig, because he inherited a rogue party, and he has all this great vision. And until you've driven out those people, or you've brought in more new dawn type people into the ANC, you're not going to change. The membership profile hasn't changed. So this is the Mukhashule Cyril the battle is symptomatic of the bigger issue with the ANC. It's about the so-called new the good guys who were fighting for Pravin Gordhan versus the bad guys who were the state capturers. So that is what we're still seeing. That's what Cyril and Ace represent in this battle of the bulls.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's going to be sorted out anytime soon, though.
And the role of Denovo Mkhwebane in all of this. So where
the public protector,
who as a head of a Chapter 9 institution, you would then, you know, what we hope for or think is that they are outside of the remit of whether it is Luthuli House or whether it is the union buildings. They're supposed to be on their own and independent and, you know, protecting the interests of the public.
I don't know, but Ms. Mkhwebane, I really don't know how to feel about her, whether she needs a hug. Is it auntie you just want to sit down with and say, are you okay?
Is everything okay at home?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an advocate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in my life, really, I've come across some brilliant advocates and people who understand the law, who will persuade you, and they use logic and reason. So I'm yet to come across that from the public protector. The things she says, I mean, just somebody who's really struggling to assert her authority anywhere she goes, and she's a victim par excellence. And it's the media. It's just nobody wants to talk to me, and I'll do my own press conferences on YouTube because Cliff Central is not going to come to me and do any interview.
She's exceedingly victimized for someone who's really just been given a job because she was well connected.
Yeah, I mean, the judges are so bad, and they hate me, and this is why they're making all these rulings about me. And she hasn't understood, I mean, the very basics of her job, and she's made some scandalous, judgments, really. And the latest is the Pravin Gordhan matter, which is on review now, which she says is unethical and it's terrible. I mean, a bad decision is a bad decision. Say that if that's what you want to say. But you do. That's overreach, what she's done there. So, then in the case of the politics we've had the past 10 years, you start wondering if she was a deployee strategically from the previous setup. I mean, Jacob Zuma excelled in appointing poorly equipped people into serious positions.
It suited him because then he could control those positions, right? And those people were only there because of their loyalty to him.
Of course, I mean, we had Des Van Rooyen as the finance minister. I mean, I remember when I heard that the guy was going to be the finance minister, I looked around and said, who's this guy? Where's he from? I asked ANC people. They were like, maybe did he come from the National Party? Or like the name Des Van Rooyen? And they didn't know.
Like, very senior, knew. Very they all thought he was a white guy.
They did. in the part. So we had Ria Piecha, an HR specialist in charge of the police. Then we get surprised when we get Marikana. And we had so many of them in various positions at SARS with Tom Moyane.
Tom Moyane.
Yeah, yeah. Now we ended up with somebody who comes from the spies apparatus in government as a public a protector, and Parliament gave us that. I mean, our Parliament has been a disaster.
Well, the EFF were big fans of hers and continue to be, which is another thing worth exploring. Why have they got such a... What's their dog in the fight here with this Pravin thing? They seem like they've got their sights on him. What has Pravin got on the EFF, and what has the EFF got a problem with Pravin about? What's really going on here? Can you surmise? Because we always have to read between the lines.
Wait. Julius Malema owns property, right?
Uh-huh.
He's got a state house in Parliament, uh-huh, in Cape Town as an MP.
Yeah.
His wife is a tenant of a famous
cigarette smuggler.
Really? Okay. Let's take a step back. Fine. If his family is in business with the cigarette smuggler, and SARS investigates cigarette smugglers. Pravin Gordhan comes from SARS, and he's part of the Indian cabal, according to the EFF.
Yeah.
Ivan Pillay is Indian. He comes from SARS. He's therefore controlled by Pravin Gordhan.
Ah, I see.
Pravin Gordhan and Trevor Manuel are part of the cabal that governs South Africa. So if
Along with the Ruperts.
Yes. So if you dismantle that network, Tom Moyane gets his job back, the cigarette smuggler is safe, and many more people.
This is such a priority for Julius, if we join those dots that you set out for us. It's such a priority for Julius, he would be willing to lose political points on this end in order to protect the cigarette smuggler on this end. That's how important this guy is to him. Because it's clear he's against state capture. Julius has been saying from day one, he's not with the state capture people.
You see, the thing with the state
capture... Because you can't be both here.
Yeah, I think the state capture is a very, very narrow definition that we're looking at. State capture is a metaphor for Zuma and the Guptas. Julius fell out with Zuma and he didn't like him anymore, and there's no real relationship with him and the Guptas. So he doesn't want those captures. It seems he's okay with a different kind of a capture. Mukhwebane can be a representative of a new kind of capture. Capture South Africa as long as you don't capture my interests in South Africa.
Okay.
So he's part of, I mean, that on-point Limpopo capture, I mean, is Julius' name in every conversation when you look at it. So, I mean, there's a lot for him in the Pravin Gordhan. The two of them, I mean, Gordhan is a big threat to Julius. You'll remember that it was Pravin Gordhan and the Treasury who went to rescue Limpopo from its capturers 10 years ago.
That's right. They put it under administration.
Maybe Pravin Gordhan has got a file in his briefcase about Julius. If he is part of the cabal and he controls things, I mean, if you're Julius Malema, he's the first guy that must go.
You know, I'm always so deeply fascinated by the way that South Africans selectively look at the pieces of the puzzle. Yeah. So we're all trained on the state capture thing and all of, you know, now Jacob Zuma, I've said this before, is Jacob Zuma is the evil guy.
He's the scapegoat for
everything. He's the evil guy, and yeah, everything with Jacob Zuma, around Jacob Zuma, must go, and in every way. And this is what, you know, when we think about Ace, is we see him in relation to Jacob Zuma. When we think about Busisiwe, we see her in relation to Jacob Zuma. The Batabiles, all of those people, we see in relation to Jacob Zuma because we are unhappy with them. Mm-hmm. At this moment. And then I'm so reminded of the love that South Africans now have of our Chief Justice, right? Love the man. And not so long ago, he was a Jacob Zuma appointee, and everybody was like, whoa, can we trust this guy with the judiciary? Because if Jacob Zuma trusts him, but now we love him. Now we no longer are tainting him with the, is he part of the Jacob Zuma cabal?
You can even call this up in a more recent example, because there were people who were already apologists for Cyril before he'd done anything. He came in and they were saying, oh, this is our man, it's going to be great, Cyril, the new dawn, all this stuff, this Ramaphoria. And you know as well as I do that Cyril was part of that administration. But he was in those meetings.
And for me, this is the thing about how selective we are. So now that we have made Jacob Zuma the bogeyman, all of the individuals that we're currently looking at and have our sights trained on, whose judgments, whose decisions, whose actions we may not like, then we very quickly put
associate them,
back them
with Jacob Zuma
to the Jacob Zuma camp. And I'm fascinated by one of the things that you said in your article a couple of days ago in the Daily Maverick is about how one of these days, I mean, Busisiwe Mkhwebane has had so many of her judgments kind of questioned. She's got so many under review as well, you know, and Pravin being the latest in a long line of, is that one of these days she is going to stumble on a judgment we love.
Yeah, and then suddenly we'll all love her.
She's going to stumble on it and she'll do something, and it may not be what she's hoping for, but it's going to be what South Africans are hoping for. And suddenly all her fortunes are going to be turned in that way. And I'm just, so for me, it's fascinating that we do this, that we kind of look at all of these individuals. Similarly with the ACE and the Cyril thing, is we are clear that there's a power struggle between ACE and Cyril. And we are clear that power struggle, for some reason, we think that Jacob Zuma is the person controlling the strings around it. And so while these two are butting heads, we are clear that Jacob Zuma is the reason for why they are butting heads. And we are not happy with Ace, because Ace is a Jacob Zuma guy. But I don't think that's what it's going to be. So, like when Bathabile left, did anybody think that it would be like this? She's gone and like nothing.
Made no
nothing
difference.
Has happened. Not a blip. Nothing has happened to Cyril.
But
no machinations, no this. If Cyril was a decisive leader, he needs to make a decision. If he is unhappy with the way that ACE is running that party, he is the leader of the party. He is the leader of the party. He said he wanted a strong mandate. He's been given a strong mandate. Sure, it was with a couple of votes, right? But the mandate is stronger than the other guy's mandate.
Sure.
So he must make a decision. He must stand up. Nelson Mandela had the same problem. When Holomisa became a problem, what did he do? He expelled him. So that's what Cyril must do. He must make a decisive move.
But does he have the bones? Does he have the spine to do this?
Let's see. Cyril. How old is he? 66. And he was angry once at the Mandela Memorial.
Yeah.
He shouted at a few people in the crowd and pointed a finger at them and say, "Hey, you stop singing while I'm on stage." You know, it's the last time I saw him angry. And then he took some decision. We fired Tom Moyane.
He did not fire Tom Moyane.
He fired him.
He waited for somebody to say he should fire him.
So in 66 years, I was trying to think if there is any track record of a decisive Cyril
action.
Ramaphosa and action. And I haven't done even the history.
I sense a lot of doubt.
Even the history I've looked at, I haven't come across many. He's not that kind of operator there. And he's very skillful, and he's got this natural instinct about him, and the sense, his sense of timing is amazing. That's how he became the president of the ANC.
By waiting for his time to come.
Yeah, he's very good.
Sitting
at
there.
It. He's like very, very good. And he senses, and then when the time comes, the machine just kicks in, and he starts speaking so beautifully. Honey comes out of his mouth, and he says all the wonderful things he's going to be saying tonight at the State of the Nation address. And then you feel, my goodness, you send me, and I'm part of this. Then you feel your goosebumps. And you know. But then when you look at the decisive action, he's not going to do that anytime soon. So I think the game plan is to let Ace hang himself, and thinking that South Africans will reward the ANC with another mandate in the next election in 5 years' time, which is very naive a thing to do. So the choice here is you choose to be decisive now and take the fight to somebody like Ace and people, the whole ACE character of the ANC, and do that now and break the whole thing up, and then you be known in the short term as the guy who messed things up, and the ANC splits up and it loses power in 5 years, or you wait and the ANC eventually loses power because you waited And then
it's a zero sum game, right?
It is. I mean, it is. He's got no way out of this. Even if he removes an ace from that, he puts somebody from his own camp. That camp is so weak generally because the ANC has been so weak.
Mm.
It comes from the same ANC that it said by itself. I mean, in the past 15 years, the ANC has been writing documents saying we are weak intellectually. So whoever replaces Ace is going to have no solutions for the renewal of the ANC, for help the ANC govern South Africa better. I mean, that is the ANC.
Well, let's turn our attention, if you don't mind, Sam, to the from the executive to the legislature, because we've just had a number of announcements of the chairs of the portfolio committees. And these are quite important people because they're the ones who, in the last 2 or 3 years, have been largely spearheading investigations into what happened at state-owned enterprises and such things. So they do have power, and they're important people. And some of these people are former ministers. They served under the previous administration. They've made it onto the ruling ANC National Congress's preferred list of candidates to chair these oversight committees. So we've got Faith Mutambi. We've got Musbenzi Zwane. We've got Tina Jumit-Peterson.
At police.
So what do we think of these people? Because clearly they have been undeniable failures in their portfolios as ministers. I mean, Musbenzi Zwane is possibly facing legal action. Faith Mutambi, we thought she disappeared into the ether. She's clearly back and still she's got enough influence in there to be elected to this position. Is this significant or am I overplaying them?
That's totally significant. But when I look at it in the real sense and beyond the shock if we didn't have Faith, the likes of Faith Mutambi's day and the Zwanes, who would we have out of that list? Were there any wow candidates?
No.
So, I mean, the ANC says no problem with having Faith Mutambi and Msebenzi Zwane as its members. I mean, they've had them for the longest of times. And so it's just a question of Ace Magashule doing what he does and sending the middle finger to serious people in South Africa. Saying we don't care what you think about the damage that we've done. We've taken South Africa through to junk and we've given you serious public debt. I mean, we're spending now on servicing our public debt the same as we are spending on education. Sure. And that's the fastest growing item on that budget. I mean, we're in a difficult situation. We're losing jobs. In the first quarter of this year, we lost almost 300,000 jobs. And so this is now saying, oh, South Africa, thank you very much. We did this to you, but we're going to bring you the very same players who did this thing to you to make sure that this new dawn works. The reason we have the Zondo Commission is that Parliament didn't do its job of holding the executive accountable. That executive that was not accountable went rogue. Now, that executive that was rogue is now in Parliament to oversee an executive that's supposed to correct itself from a rogue executive. So it's not going to happen. It's just a disastrous array. But then you wonder, when Ace Magashule lands in Cape Town, where was the ANC chief whip? When somebody like Ace is in your town, you go receive them at the airport.
Yeah.
You create a crisis for him. You send him back to Matatiel to solve a new ANC problem because you're managing him. You know, right. If he's got too much time in his hands, he's going to cause problems.
Is that what you're hoping for? You're hoping for Sis Pemi to have done all of that? Sis Pemi?
Get hold of Ace Magashule's notebook and make sure he doesn't have that list. Now, if he has to create a new one, it's going to take him 25 hours at least to rush out the new names and all to remember the names. His cell phone, make sure that it's flat. Take his charger and make sure you just create a problem for the guy because he's going to have he's going to cause problems for you. But the biggest issue,
deflate his tires, something, right? Make something happen. I mean, you're right. These things can change
But this is how the other camp ran. This is how the Zuma camp operated.
Yeah, they would use underhanded tactics.
It is so that's political.
It's politicking, man. It's politicking.
It's not a nice thing to say, but that's the real world. That's how we operate. But then the chief whip so you have to imagine a day before the State of the Nation address where the chief whip would be. The outfit was bought 2 months ago, so that's not the issue. She is in front of a massive mirror trying out the hat. Does it fit? Does it not fit? And reciting a speech, the tone is right.
For the red carpet, there's no red carpet, man. It's been slashed. It's been slashed.
She doesn't need the red carpet. She is the red carpet. So she's
she is the red carpet. My God, this is the one who Pumi just showed me a picture of her outfit at the last one.
Bona, this, Yona, this is Sis Pemi, and I just discovered, I think 2 days ago, that they also call her DJ Pemi. I was just like, what? Really? Mm. She is, was it you that said she's a praise singer? That's what she, that enjoys a screaming match every now and again. No, and you see, this is the thing. We spoke about KPIs. Right, to say, what do these people do? Yeah. What is it that these people are expected to do? And because as South Africans, we are not quite clear what it is that they are expected to do or supposed to do. You can sit and say the chief whip should be out there, like, you know, herding the squirrels, as it were, in terms of Ace and his people, you know, and giving them direction and pointing them in the various places where they should be so that they are not meddling where they can, where they want to be. Yeah. But it's also because we don't quite know what the job of the chief whip is in that instance and what it is that we should be expecting of her,
mm-hmm.
and what the ANC's expectation of this chief whip is, because this is their person, you know, and what Cyril is expecting of this individual and what is it that they're supposed to be delivering.
And we were just
on,
when we spoke about KPIs last week, we were talking about deputy ministers, and we couldn't discover any constitutional parameters for them to operate within. A deputy minister is not created by the constitution, and they have no real function according to the constitution either. But they obviously, there are places that have been made for people who need jobs, who need to be on the state payroll, because they wouldn't make it in the real world. So we understand that with deputy ministers. Yeah. But here's the chief whip. Now, the chief whip's job has always been in parliament to make sure that the ANC caucus knows how to vote, what to do, what
whipping
kind of legislation. Right, what legislation to push, what bills we need to promulgate. Do you think Pemi Majordina has any idea of what any of that stuff's all about? Or do you think she's choosing her outfit? Seriously.
You know what Penny's going to struggle with? Dr. Ndlozi. DJ versus Dr. Ndlozi. And then you get Floyd Chibamb.
Yeah.
You've got Julius Malema. Very brilliant politicians. I mean, you just...
She's going to struggle even with the most basic. So she's going to struggle no Makaula. She is going to struggle with Makaula. She will not be able to, even as we see all of these chairpersons and these portfolio committees, what she's going to struggle with the most is going to be whipping the people into a focused direction that says these are the things that we came out of NASREC with, these are the things that we need to implement, and this is how we are pushing through these legislations.
You know, Sam, you just said something a moment ago that made me think. The ANC has admitted itself that it doesn't have the intellectuals it used to have. It doesn't have that well that they can dip into of smart people who they can appoint into places where they need things to happen. The ANC has a problem with merit. They've got a real problem with this. They may be brilliant people at branch level, who knows, but we never hear about them. All we hear about is these very average people who get deployed into places. And they've ruined portfolio after portfolio. Now the chief whip is someone who, clearly, the two of you are saying, is incapable of the role which she has assumed. Now, is there no one in the ANC who can take over these jobs? Because otherwise, as you say, inevitably the ANC is doomed to failure, whether it's now or in 5 years' time. But surely they see this and their own survival instinct must kick in. A lot of these people are, if nothing else, shrewd politicians. Now, even if your motivation is completely self-interest, there's got to be a survival instinct that kicks in and goes, all right, well, let's just create a patina of competence somewhere. Let's just find someone who, even if they are, you know, ideologically not in my camp or whatever, let's find someone who can assume that role, at least fill 70% of the capacity that's needed for that role, so that we don't make a complete humiliation of ourselves again. And end up costing ourselves much, much quicker than we expect to. You won't have anything. There won't be one job to deploy to a cadre if the ANC doesn't have the majority in Parliament in the next 5 years. Don't they see that? Is there no urgency?
I mean, this is a big question, that, and some people do. I mean, they realize it, but the reality is, it's like a vessel out there, rough season, it's taking in and water, and you know you want to get it out, and the drunk passengers, and
sounds horrible, a creaking, leaking vessel in rough seas,
and you're thinking, let's do something. We can see, the captain can see that there's.
Can the captain see though?
The captain can see, but the problem is the captain can see if he acts in a way that unsettles the drunk passengers, they'll toss him out. Anyway, they've got the power. And Ace Magashule doesn't have to follow any rules. He does what he likes. He gives you Faith Matambe and Zwane as key representatives in Parliament. He can tell you today that the ANC thinks that the Reserve Bank's mandate needs to be changed in this way or
yeah,
that
he doesn't
way.
Mind what damage he does.
Yeah, yeah. So... Oh. People are
like a drunk passenger.
Yeah, they're unplayable. If it was boxing, you're up with a boxer who doesn't have to follow the rules. They have to punch you below the belt. They don't care whether they get docked points. They don't have to win this game in the traditional sense. They're playing a completely a different game to put you out of your structured, methodical thinking and procedure. So Cyril is going to stick to his procedural approach, and people like him will keep doing that until they...
And he'll get punched below the belt.
All the time, and then they'll have to keep pointing out, hey, that's not what we're doing. This is boxing. And the other guy isn't a boxer.
He's a cage fighter.
Yeah, that's what we're looking
at. What a metaphor. Cage fighter versus boxer. I mean, this is what we're stuck with. This is what we've got.
In a sinking vessel out at sea.
So outside of that, what is there? Because we're always looking for a reason to be optimistic, right? The economy is giving us none of that at the moment. 3.2% decline in GDP. We see unemployment keeps ticking up and up and up. We see the state bill. You mentioned earlier that the debt clock is also ticking up and up and up. So is there anything that Cyril can say tonight? It's his sona. Is there anything he can say tonight that would... give people a reason to reset their clocks on the ANC's ultimate demise, and therefore the demise of the country? Are there good reasons for people to believe that the ANC is a trustworthy... And there are lots of people who've been saying this. You know, plenty of commentators and business people have been backing Cyril. They've said, oh, he just needs the mandate. Now he's got the mandate. Now, is there something he's going to deliver tonight, a clanger, that's going to make everyone go, wow? Because this is the last chance saloon, right?
Yeah, but I mean, Cyril's a great speaker. He really gives you the sense that he knows you personally, and he knows where you're coming from and where you're going and where you need to go. He's going to deal generally in its sense. I mean, it's quite an important thing about the tone of the State of the Nation address. I mean, he's quite capable of delivering a feel-good speech, and he's going to do that. In terms of the real work that needs to be done, I mean, he has to save Eskom, and so there's more money down the drain. And the difficult decisions around SAA and this, generally the state-owned enterprises, that's what he needs to do. I don't know if he's there yet. All the stuff is lined up nicely for him to make big announcements.
But his enemy there is the unions, because they won't let him, for example, in SAA, they won't let him fire all these superfluous people.
Yeah, that's an issue. I mean, also the other thing is, I mean, the numbers at Eskom is bloated, and Cyril has actually acknowledged that. So if you have to fire 15,000 people in this political economy, and this disastrous, not just the unions, I mean, you don't want to flood out the unemployment sector that quick. You lose power, you'll have all those people out in the streets, and you're creating a worse problem for yourself, despite the whole economic matrix and what needs to be done about this thing. So it's a very difficult decision that is due. The unions practically at a shop floor level will stop him doing things, but the union at leadership level, if we can call them unionists really, I mean, they got jobs in parliament, and those guys are happy. They're not going to complain.
No, they're arch capitalists now.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they're not gonna, going to complain. So the business will be very happy with his speech. The most vocal part of business in South Africa is it's your banking types.
Your big banks, sure.
Those guys will be very, very happy. And what needs to be done is good for them. If you have to break up Eskom and deal with its debt, you're refinancing it. So that's loans coming out of investors and the banks, and all these things will need finance, the infrastructure drive, and those guys will be watching. Okay, this is our guy, and he's doing exactly what we need. And so I'm sure he will say a few things along those lines. I mean, last year he promised us a stimulus package, and you go through the budget with the fine tooth comb, and like, oh my goodness, where is this thing? And I still can't see a single comma, let alone a number out of that budget that says stimulus. So he's also promised to change this whole visa regulations, and so that skilled people could come into South Africa quite easily. I mean, last night he was talking about the same thing. I'm like, dude, you said this in October last year.
What's happened?
How long does it take, really, to gazette this?
So he's all hot air. So he's going to give more hot air tonight.
Yeah,
and maybe,
but
maybe the people who've already supported him will continue to find reasons to support him. Is he going to say anything that'll help poor people? Is he going to say anything that'll help taxpayers?
The thing is, there's no room there. I mean, it's only next year's budget, really, that we can start talking about.
Even things that would make people feel better about, you know, the trajectory that we're on.
So I think he will say stuff that will make people feel better superficially, because he's good at it. He's not good at it, guys.
I agree he's good at it, but he's in a very difficult situation. The stuff that will make people feel good and in a significant way needs money. Mm-hmm. Something that we do not have. There's really no fiscal wiggle room to do anything, really. So the reforms he needs to introduce, for example, I mean, that stuff takes a lot of time for it to kick in. In economics, for example, an interest rate decision will take 18 months for it to make its
impact
way through the economic system. And so any decisions taken now will have a real impact in 2-3 years down the line. So sentiment is going to be a big problem for him to manage. And his public relations team needs to think about that, because, I mean, he's in a difficult situation. Whatever he does is not going to please the ordinary guy.
All right. Can we turn our attention to other things, maybe, because this is depressing? I don't know how else to do it.
But I do want to say, you know, one of the things that we don't do often enough as citizens, mm-hmm, is we may sit through and kind of watch with a glaze over our eyes, watch that sewn up. But I think it's important that we spend the time and take it to heart. So what he is speaking about and the places where he has very little room to swing a cat, Sam, you are right. But the things that he will speak about tonight are things that I think as individuals, so as individual business people, as individuals in our workplaces, are things that we can definitely take to heart and look for opportunities in. Because when they have set that course, so similarly, you know, they talk about visa regulations and getting more people in opportunities to come into the country with skill, is that therein is where the opportunity is for a business person. If you have got friends, if you've got associations outside of the country, you're able to exploit that, because now it is going to become easier for you to do something in that space. Where he, even when he did talk about his economic stimulus package, I thought what was very fascinating, which a lot of business people were not able to put a handle on, is when he did talk about that stimulus package, and then they had that investment summit and all of these local businesses who then spoke about what it is that they are doing in various parts of the country. Those are the opportunities that as small business, as employers, we should be looking at and then going, if there is stuff happening in Richards Bay, because Bidvest is already doing stuff in Richards Bay. They are doing stuff there. So pay attention and see how you can be part of that kind of growth and how that impacts on your business, because they are doing it anyway. That sector is doing it. So when you're listening to the speech tonight, don't listen out for all of the grand gestures. Do not listen out for the grand gestures. Listen out for the real, tangible, small things that are in place and look for opportunities in that space. Because I think that's where South Africans are. We're so caught up in the myopia of, oh, woe is me, all of the big things.
Okay,
but there is stuff happening. There is stuff happening. So look for opportunities to dribble through the environment as it is.
Okay, no, good. That's sane advice. It's sensible advice. Sam and Pumi, there are these investigations going on. We've got these commissions of inquiry. Are we at all excited about what will come from any of them? What might be done? Is there any execution afterwards? Or are they just talk shops? Because we haven't seen one person go to jail. Not one. We've got thieves all around us, and nobody's in jail.
Where's my money, McKinsey?
The people who are in jail are like drug dealers and petty criminals and people who are too poor to afford lawyers. Our jails are full, but none of the grand larceny lands you in jail. Is anyone going to go to jail? This is a tough question. It's not fair for me to ask you two. But when you discuss this around the dinner table, is there consensus
around the dinner table?
No,
we're fine. We're just discussing those things.
You don't discuss
also
other
we don't
things.
Have dinners. We just like promise each other coffees.
Oh. Yeah, you don't do what you mean. What do you think, Sam?
Look, out of the Zondo Commission, there's so much stuff that's come out and stuff really that should have been acted on a long time ago. So I don't know. I mean, the problem that we have is just the hawks, the whole police capacity right through the country. And
prosecution capacity.
No, but now we're beyond the hawk stage. What did I say to you and Kenton when Batohi, when we were all, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Batohi.
Shamila Batohi.
Shamila is going to be, right? And what does Shamila do? She just had a press conference like everybody else has since. At this stage, Shamila has got enough information, actionable information. There's no longer a need for an investigation. The stuff is out there in the public space.
Right.
She needs to take it to the prosecution level. She no longer needs somebody out there investigating and bringing her more. Start where you are now. That's where we are. But what have we seen Shamila do?
Zero.
By the way, that handle that's out there is not her handle. She did also put that out there to say
what on Twitter?
No, but let's look at it this way, guys. Who did she take over from?
The sheep, Shaun the Sheep.
Okay. What kind of office did she inherit?
A disaster.
So who's going to prosecute what case?
Yeah, she doesn't have any good prosecutors.
Where are the dockets?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the head of the Hawks not so long ago? That guy who might... has got a missing tooth.
Which one are you talking about?
Scary guy. The one who said a court judgment that is negative on him is merely the judge's opinion. In Tlemeza,
burning in Tlemeza.
Yeah. So if he ran the Hawks and Shaun the Sheep ran the prosecution,
they've been denuded of capacity.
Then you bring Batohi, who everybody says is a great South African and a very competent person. So now the stuff that we're seeing here, it needs to be converted properly into stuff you can really take and put in front of a judge. And if you look at the...
Look, I hear that, but I think it is a cop-out. And I'll tell you why I think it's a cop-out. There are, at executive level, across the board, across all our state SOEs, everybody, we can find lots of different faults. But the reality is that every single day, guys, all of those entities continue to deliver to South Africans, right? So planes are not falling out of the sky in this country. There are people there working. Mm. There are people who... So there may be a problem. There may have been a problem at executive level. So you have Shaun who's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely disagree with the view that says there are hundreds of thousands of people that have been working in those institutions over all of these years. All of those people, what has happened to all of those people? That's absolute rubbish. It's easy for us to say, yeah, Mara, you know, Pope Benning, they this office that they have inherited, come on. Come on, there are men and women in all of those places that have been working diligently over the years. Why are those people not being given an opportunity? Who they reported to is one aspect. That person is no longer there. So when you say this, and this is why I'm saying to you, trains run late, but they run. They run late, but they run. People get to work on those trains. Planes do not fall out of the sky. So the reason why, when there is load shedding, we can have the kind of outrage that we have is because, hey, most of the time the electricity is there. And I'm saying there are people there who are competent, who are working. They may have been scampered from the top every now and again, right? Because that's what that executive did. So now when you, Shamila, walk into that environment, you are not going to be scampering it. Why are you not looking at who is in this environment? What have they been doing? How have they been working? And give them an opportunity to shine.
Give them an opportunity to shine. Sam is looking at you like you're insane.
I absolutely refuse to believe that. People are working hard in this country.
It's good to hold a very firm position despite the fact.
No, seriously. So tell me this. Explain that to
me. One day I hope I'll be able to write a book on these things, and I'm collecting some material and about the state of the hawks. And you really get shocked, and I don't fully comprehend what was done under the Jacob Zuma era. The appointments that were made at regional level, and somebody who's never seen a docket in their lives, they get to run the Hawks in a very serious position. I mean, I had a meeting the one day with somebody very senior in the Hawks who almost ran a unit of more than 250 prosecutors, or very senior people.
Yeah.
This person in their private lives is a religious fanatic, and also in the very same private life they are a Sangoma. In this very private life they want to advise me on how to become a successful author and journalist, and they also want to put me in touch with their pastor to help me get equipment that can bug people's phone and track people's cars. And you get shocked, and you're thinking, where are we here? This is an official meeting you are having with me here, and you are advising me to do illegal things and drawing on all your personal being a Sangoma and a religious fanatic, and you are in charge of running a key the position in the Hawks, and this is who you are. And now you have to imagine the 250 professionals that will report to this mad person.
But I am talking about the 250 professionals of whom you speak. They no longer have to report to this mad person. These 250 professionals.
No, this is where you're wrong. A lot of those people still around.
This is where
you're wrong. Where are those 250 professionals now?
This is where you are wrong. These 250 professionals have to follow the laws and the rules of working under this mad person. This mad person is still in place. We haven't seen anyone being fired from the Hawks or the NPA to change things. That's actually the reality. We haven't comprehended the state of the decay. You see, when you talk about the corrosion we saw under the Jacob Zuma era, we look at it at the senior level, at executive managerial level, and at cabinet, and the state of the decay is deep. It really, really is deep, and it goes beyond this thing with just the ANC and the Hawks. Hawks is a fascinating aspect of it for me. It's the kind of the people you get in the Durban mayor and the mayor outside of the ANC, the mayor in PE. He's another mad guy running
a lunatic.
Big city.
Right.
And so...
And he's from the UDM, right?
Yeah. So this problem is deep. The other one, move beyond the bad people. We've had the Shaun the Sheep and the Ace Makhashule, as we say. Look at the good people who are supposed to be changing these things. We forget that there's a David Mabuza who is the second most powerful person in South Africa. That guy shares the same DNA as Ace Makhashule. But because he comes from the right camp, and then we find about it.
Right, he was in the Premier League with him, with him and Supra.
So, Sam, I am not disagreeing with you that there is a deep-seated rot. I am simply saying, where you have a Shamila that has been put in place, right? And the point of putting her in that place is to say that here you have a strong mandate and you have the support of the executive. So you have the support of the president that says what you need to do is move forward from where you are, move forward and clean this environment up. Okay. On the one side. And then you have Shamila walking into an environment. Let us just say there are 250 good professionals within her organization, right? So like all CEOs in all private sector companies, you walk in there, you have 100 days to assess and decide who you move forward with and how you are going to move forward. You have to start somewhere.
Yeah, but you have to start somewhere. Can I interject here? This crazy person who Sam just referred to now, and there could be 5, 10, 15, there could be 100 of these crazy people, because they were plucked out of obscurity and put into position just because Jacob Zuma knew he could control them. And he could basically denude the public prosecution service, the criminal justice system, of any competence so that he himself couldn't be come after. Now, it wasn't just him, but this woman comes in. This guy's crazy enough to threaten her and her children and her livelihood and her security, and that she'll be murdered in her driveway at night. And she must take him seriously.
And she took the job knowing that this crazy person is there.
And I think she took the job because she doesn't have the like everybody in politics in this country. You do what you can where you can. And you mustn't expect too much of these people, and you mustn't expect too little of them. They're going to do what they can, and what they can't do, they'll just leave on the side.
Oh, then she we don't need people like her. We need people. We need people. This is the thing
Who's brave enough to take on these lunatics?
This is the thing I'm saying about Cyril too. Is that when you take this job, understanding what we all sit here understanding, that the system has been broken in many parts, that there is a lot of patronage, that there is lots of rot. And you take this job saying, I, Tumamina, right? And I am willing to stand in that gap, and I'm going to do what needs to be done to clean up, what needs to be done. People were willing, if she's not brave enough, if she's just taking the job because somebody is giving her the job, she is the wrong South African for that job.
I think, yeah, I get the point. But the process is different though. The police investigate. They take the docket to the prosecution. She takes the decision. There's no evidence that she has actually shied away from a very good case that's been prepared for her.
No, there isn't.
The issue is that this is the police side of things that we need to focus on. It's not Shamila's Batoi's job to investigate these things. She must prosecute.
She must prosecute them.
But there's no docket in front of her. The police side of things. The hawks must investigate.
So, so then begs the question, why do we then need all of these various commissions which are there supposedly to air out and give an opportunity to put evidence in front of not just the commissioner, not just in front of the judge, but in front of all South Africans, evidence of wrongdoing, right? So what is it when you are now sitting at the NPA level where the evidence has been presented in a particular forum in the way that it is? What is it that is stopping the prosecution, right, from retrofitting? Here is the evidence. How do we build a case around the evidence that we have?
Okay.
We don't have time to carry on, but we've gone down a dark path here. I just want to read this quickly. This is from somebody on the WhatsApp line this morning. Welcome to Mr. Mkogeli. Already very much enjoying your objective info that you bring to the table. You're welcome on our home speaker every day. Welcome to see you back again soon. Another clear understanding on so many hot topics, burning platforms. So thank you very much for that. Sam, thank you for joining us this morning. Pumi, you are on fire, as always. But you can check out Sam Gokeli's work in, among other things, Daily Maverick. And he will probably join us again if he enjoyed this morning.
Come and visit us again. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we're not just saying that. We're not just saying it.
We mean it.
We mean what we say.
Thank you so much. All right, that's the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's this morning. You can join us. Oh, Pumi, are you all right?
Wow.
Sure. Pumi's now the one who's got what Sia had last week.
Swine flu.
I know, it's terrible. Also because the kids bring it home, right?
Hish. Yeah. Nonsense.
Tough. All right, stick around because the first episode of The Interchange with Tsimong and Absa coming up next. That'll give you a chance to get into the heads of some of our brightest young people in South Africa and to get to the arguments that they're interested in, the most relevant subjects for discussion.
This is CliffCentral.com.